welcome back to Cinema Vino.
Hey.
This is going to be part three of our Dealer's Choice series with our each host.
Yeah.
Picks a big movie, picks something they love. And Taylor chose Con Air.
Damn right.
Which I would say to know Taylor's to love Taylor. Just like to know Con Air is to love Con Air.
Damn right.
Taylor, can you do the rest of this podcast with the accent that Nick Cage uses in this film?
That accent is still being researched by, like, you know, scholars.
Alabama?
Oh, my God. I don't know what it... Yeah.
Honey, I'd like to give you this bunny.
I mean, it kind of had a little bit of...
In the box. So,
again, that opening scene, you know, so it's like when he's reading the voiceovers, it's like... Dear honey, I miss you a lot. I hope to see you soon. Prison is scary. And I was like, what is happening?
Dear God, make me a bird.
I really got a Forrest Gump vibe from as well, which is weird because Bubba's in this movie, because definitely during a scene later in the movie where it's like, if I'd known that was the last time me and Bubba was going to talk, I'd thought of something better to say. So anyway,
Nick Cage's accent work is marvelous and consistent.
Yeah,
no matter where he is or what role he's playing, it's the same accent.
Well, you know what's strange is that 2 years before this movie came out, Nick Cage won the Academy Award for Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah, right.
A crazy, like, emotional performance as an alcoholic, like, who goes to Vegas to die, drink himself to death.
And this movie ended in Vegas.
Yeah, and it's full circle.
Yeah.
And it's weird because you look at that and you think, man, Nick Cage is an amazing, like, that's such an incredible, like, raw, emotional performance. And then you start off with this, which is like, I got to get my daughter a bunny for a gift. It's like, what in the hell is going on in this movie? But it is glorious.
The movie started fast, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they don't waste no time.
What song was that?
How Do I Live?
Yeah.
Is that Leanne Rimes?
Yeah. No, this is Trisha Yearwood in this one.
Leanne Womack?
Leanne Rimes does a version of it.
Okay.
I put in my notes, this was a great time for movie songs. This late 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You had Titanic, this. Yeah. You had My Heart Will Go On.
Yeah.
You had Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls in City of Angels.
Coyote Ugly.
Yeah.
What was... Yeah. That was Leanne Rimes, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't want to miss a thing.
Can't Fight the Moonlight.
From a film we like to call Armageddon.
When did The Seal Batman come out?
95. Another great movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, just good stuff all around. And Batman and Robin had Foolish Games by Jewel.
Damn straight.
Ooh.
Also, in Batman Forever, they had Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
By U2.
By U2. Yeah.
Also, Batman and Robin... had Smashing Pumpkins. It had The End is the Beginning is the End, and The Beginning is the End is the Beginning.
Yes.
Yep.
All of the above.
Yeah.
The fast version and the slow version.
Mm-hmm.
Both lovely.
Yeah. This was a good time for
the 90s
song tracks.
I remember, I know Travis will probably yell, but the Godzilla soundtrack. It was kind of slack. Green Day had a good song.
Was better than the movie.
Puff Daddy?
Puff Daddy.
It was Puffy.
I got the trifecta there because I got Puff Daddy. I got Led Zeppelin, Kashmir, and Godzilla all in the same song. I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I called Taylor on the phone. I was like, hey, this music video is about to be on TRL.
Oh, I know you recorded it.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
That's Total Request Live.
Carson Daly.
Mm-hmm.
May he rest in peace.
Yes. Wherever he is.
Yeah.
I miss Fred Durst.
Yeah.
You know, one theme I've seen run through all of the movies that we've done has been the soundtracks.
Yeah.
Great score for Lion the Winner.
Yeah.
Amazing score for Buckaroo Banzai, obviously. Yeah.
I feel like all four of us, we're all musical beings.
Con Air, amazing score, and Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spoilers, our next episode is Superman 1978.
Yeah.
Great score.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of background.
Yeah.
This movie was released on June 6, 1997. So just at the beginning of Bill Clinton's second term.
Did it go straight to CBS?
Yeah. TNT, TBS, mm-hmm. USA.
It eventually went there and stayed there.
Oh, yeah.
Along with Gone in 60 Seconds. A budget of $75 million.
God damn.
Yeah.
That's back, all cast.
That's a lot of, that's a lot of money now.
And explosions. Cast and explosions, I
feel. Oh, Joe, my wife was watching it. She was like, how much did this movie cost?
Oh, yeah.
About the time the plane crashed in the middle of the Vegas Strip and money started raining from the sky.
Oh, yeah.
Not just crashed. It went the length of the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Ripped it to pieces. It
just went the entire length.
It was wonderful. I mean, So she'd never seen it before. She got the giggles pretty strong especially when Nick Cage, who bears a strong resemblance to muscular Jesus, jumps out of an exploding plane on the Vegas Strip.
Oh, yeah.
And stands up in slow motion as burning money falls all around him. It's like, this is wonderful. You can't make this up.
Because it's believable. Yeah. You can believe that's his real hair.
It's real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's just amazing. So it had a budget of $75 million. It grossed $224 million worldwide. So it raked in the money.
Unreal.
Oh, yeah.
It did great.
Unreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
Mm. It did what we call justifiable box office.
Did you guys see this in theaters?
I saw it in theaters.
I did not.
I think I did. I don't know. I don't remember.
No.
I definitely didn't. I was seven.
Yeah. I would have been in high school, and I remember enjoying it. I mean, I don't know if I was fully aware of how, like, kitschy, how campy it was, right. How goofy, but it's like man, it's Nick Cage with long, flowing hair in slow motion.
What year did Face Off come out?
Same year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He was in prime box office form.
I think that's right up the alley. I mean, it wasn't kitschy. That was just... what the 97 box office was.
Yeah.
I think so too. I mean, like in those mid kind of later 90s, like, man, Nicolas Cage was
the guy.
Unfortunately, everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Also, Travolta. I remember Broken Arrow and Face Off, and I'm sure there was another one in there, not Battlefield Earth.
Jeez.
But
I would love to. That'll be my Halloween pick.
Fuck that.
Battlefield Earth?
Yeah.
Ugh. You're on your own, man. That's a podcast of one right there. No, thank you.
There can be only one.
I rented that film on Blockbuster. Like, don't make me watch it again. That's all I'm saying.
I love bad movies, and that was just amazing for what it was.
I can't do it. Yeah. I was like, I saw like half of it, and I was like, nah, ain't doing that shit.
So, yeah, this movie has an all-star cast. I feel like that's an understatement for this cast.
Yeah.
And
these were actors in their prime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, at the peak of their box office draw. All of them. The whole group. And it's the same thing we said last week. I feel like the Roger Ebert thing of like, is this movie more interesting than, you know, basically having lunch with the cast backstage or partying with them at the rap party? And it's like, man, I would love to hang out with this squad of people behind the scenes.
If you had to pick one, who would you want to hang out with the most? And why is it John Malkovich?
I mean, Danny Trejo.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, Danny Trejo.
I haven't heard Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
I see. I will say I would choose Buscemi. Mm-hmm. It's like I gotta, you know,
that's true.
Because I mean, even though I love good old John, I call him John. Mm-hmm. Even though I love him, but like I feel like he would just, you know, kind of be in his own thing in the mm-hmm. corner. You know,
he would be
like,
pretentious the whole time.
Yeah. Malkovich.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Malkovich.
Johnny Malkovich.
I feel like Cusack would be kind of a dick.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah,
yeah. And I've heard Malkovich is very difficult behind the scenes. He can be an actor, like, you know, acting. But it's weird to see him do a role like this where he is kind of clearly having fun.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of playing up his own like psycho actor.
Is it weird that like when I hear his voice, I just picture him lecturing me?
Yeah.
During sex?
Not exclusively.
Oh, that was me. That was me. Sorry. I'm projecting.
That's how I hear most voices. Lecturing and me.
Our homeboy, sex. Like the other convict that was flying the plane, Swamp Thing, Lost.
Oh,
yeah. What was he? What was his name in Lost?
He was one of the others.
Yeah,
one of the others.
One of the guys. One of the main dudes, tall guy.
He could go back and forth.
It's like, we've come for your boy.
Yeah.
Come for your daughter, Chuck.
I don't remember. Okay, so quick rundown of the movie for anybody who hasn't seen it. If you haven't seen it, you're missing out. I feel like if you haven't seen it, you're missing the touch of someone who loves you.
Yeah, you're missing something.
You're living a cold, dark existence.
The only thing this film is missing is Samuel L. Jackson and snakes that are also on the plane.
Yeah. That's not a bad point.
I would mash those up.
Yeah. So basically the plot is Nick Cage plays an Army Ranger who is, I would say, wrongfully convicted of manslaughter. In no real universe does he get convicted when some guy pulls a knife on him and his pregnant wife, and he defends himself, gets sent to 8 years in prison. It doesn't matter if he's a deadly weapon or if he has like Swiss Army knives coming out of his eyeballs. There's no way he would not get off on self-defense. But in the movie world, in the Jerry Bruckheimer world, he goes to the pokey and writes his Forrest Gump letters to his wife and his...
What a terrible defense attorney.
Yeah.
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 The just guy... like, listen, you just cop to it. You'll get like 4 years most. You'll serve one. It's fine. Just do it.
Yeah. That's crazy because it's like...
Seven to ten.
Yeah. Max sentence. Ugh. And it's like, you know, he's a decorated Army Ranger coming home for the first time to meet his wife and now, you know, unborn daughter.
Who are these guys that are like, oh, Army Ranger, let's mess let's with this mess guy. With this
yeah. guy.
Yeah. Let's keep pestering him.
Yeah.
Not just once, but twice outside the bar. Let's circle him and fight him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that is total, like, you know, 80s, 90s movie villains. It's like just stupid. One dimensional. It's like, yeah, that guy with a whole chest full of medals. Let's go pick a fight with that
yeah.
guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Because I'm a regular.
And they make the bad guy so one-dimensional. It's like, you know, pussies like you, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, clearly a cardboard.
You know why we lost Nam.
Vietnam. Yeah.
What a hot take.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I didn't do any of that.
Yeah.
And I've been sitting here at the bar the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I never served my country.
Yeah.
Very relatable to today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. They call them Gravy SEALs now. Have you heard this term?
Ooh.
Like guys who are like, you know, never fought for anything anywhere, but like talk a big game at bars and pick fights in that situation. Yeah. They're the Gravy SEALs.
Yeah, I thought it was Meal Team 6.
Ooh, I like
it. Exactly. Okay. So wrongfully convicted of manslaughter, gets a crazy like movie cinematic sentence and serves it. And ultimately gets paroled, but he gets to ride aboard Con Air, which is like a cruise ship in the air, but for serial killers.
The name of the plane is the Jailbird.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I don't know if you all, I had that to
should have been the name of this film.
Yeah. Do you know what the, you know, Travis, you mentioned tagline earlier. You know what the tagline for this was?
I do not.
Buckle up. Continue, Todd.
That's a hard act to follow.
Yep.
So basically, the most dangerous character actors in the world are on this plane.
Yeah.
John Malkovich, you got Ving Rhames, Steve Buscemi, Dave Chappelle, and a whole lot of people. Danny Trejo.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There is a shit ton of people that you'll recognize populating this plane. But basically, you know, there's a hijacking because, of course, there's a hijacking. John Cusack is the guy on the ground who wears socks with sandals and has to stare at computer monitors for most of the movie. And he yells into cell phones. That was a big thing back then, was people yelling into flip phones and, you know, didn't know what the hell was going on. That was his thing.
And he was the only one that knew what was going on.
Yeah, he did. Exactly. But it's like, you know, his thing was like, he was always kind of one step behind the plot, but one step ahead of all the idiots. You had a lot of the diehard style villains in this who were like, you know, too stupid to see what's going on. And, you know, they're so bullheaded that they go right into like the face of danger or whatever, right into a trap. You know, we're watching this whole bottleneck scene toward the end. I'm like, there's no way like any law enforcement people are going into just a like, bottlenecked trap. Let's
just drive into this valley.
Yeah. Let's just go right into this kill zone.
Yeah. Cusack is the guy in the chair.
Yeah.
Like telling you, like Carl Winslow and Die Hard. Well, I don't remember his actual character name.
He's Carl Winslow. He's also a little bit of John McClane where he predicts what the bad guys are going to do before they do. It's like they're shooting at the lights.
No, you idiot. Yeah.
Carson City.
You know, he's the guy who makes everybody else look stupid on the ground. This was produced by Jerry Bruckheimer.
Oh, yeah.
Who gave us Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun, Days of Thunder, and The Rock, which was the year before.
Damn
which
right.
also starred Nick Cage.
The random dude from The Rock that's, you know, fighting Sean Connery, like, I tell you, my old man was Irish, and then punching him. You're like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
He was in Con Air.
Yeah.
He had one random, you know, couple lines.
He's the guy that walks in, and he's like, we got the plane.
Yeah, and they're like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I put that this was one of the last big, like, coked out 80s, 90s action flicks where it's like, obviously, this was bankrolled amongst a sea of powder.
Yeah.
You know, in the air. Big over the top action scenes, big over the top soundtrack, you know, both in terms of the instrumentals and the Trisha Yearwood, like the Diane Warren, How Do I Live Without You?
Ugh.
You know, Diane Warren was one of those big songwriters at the time who only knew one gear, and that was fifth gear, like over-the-top power ballad. I don't know who wrote My Heart Will Go On. I don't know if she was in on that, but that sounds like Diane
Warren. Yeah.
Like big soap opera song.
God.
But this movie is definitely, I mean, it's, I don't even think I'd call it a cult hit. I don't think you can call it a cult hit if it grosses $250 million.
No, yeah.
But it definitely,
it's got cult status as well, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's held up. People still enjoy it to this day.
You don't have to go broke to be a cult movie.
Yeah, yeah. No. And, you know, this is just a good example of a true popcorn movie where you can watch it and not use your brain at all.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I watched a football game at the same time I was watching this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. You could do multiple games of Sudoku or whatever. Like, you could not pay any attention to anything going on.
Yeah, your popcorn's going to be gone in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably have this movie on mute and still understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, like, okay, he killed them. He's in jail. Now he's getting out of jail. Oh, the plane's been hijacked. Someone's trying to save the plane. Oh, the plane has crashed. Oh, he met his wife again. Cool. Mm-hmm. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tay, this was your movie. And we've discussed before that you have a type of movie.
Yes.
You like the big over the top, action movie, one-liners.
Buck, we could watch Over the Top.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's definitely on the list.
Demolition Man. We discussed also.
Let's do a whole season on Stallone.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do a whole thing on
Stallone series.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me a chance to break up my impression, you know, you just kind of do it.
But, was it Don't Throw Mom from the Train? Or Stopping My Mom Will Shoot.
My Mom Will Shoot.
But then Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag?
That was Joe Pesci. But that'll give me a chance to do my Joe Pesci.
Anyway.
So, Tay, yes. Your thoughts on this film?
This film, I never saw in theaters. It was one of those films, like just Sean said, I saw it on TV. And, you know, looking back, I was like, when did I watch this film? And I honestly can't tell you.
When didn't you watch this film?
Yeah.
Every Sunday at TBS at noon.
That's the thing. It was like USA, TNT, whatever it was. And I remember just like, I do remember watching it on TV for the first time and being like, what in the fuck is this? And I was like, I have to figure out how to watch this film in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I bought it on DVD or rented it or whatever, but I watched the whole thing and I was like, I think I got to watch this again. And I was like, I'm not quite sure what I just watched. And I hate to say it, but it was like love at first sight. And I was already a huge, huge fan of The Rock. And I think we did a podcast on that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, The Rock, kind of the same thing. These action films, one-liners, Sean Connery. And I think that was what this film was. It's just a big one-liner film that is that it actually is action-packed. And the storyline is so ridiculous, but honestly, it actually kind of stays throughout the entire movie. Like, there aren't a whole lot of plot twists to it. I mean, there are, but it was just like, you know, okay, well, the plane goes down into a massive desert. But we're still just, you know, we're just going to keep this on going.
Mm-hmm. One thing to be said of this movie is there's a lot of iconic GIFs.
Yeah.
Out of this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Him walking out of the bus and his hair just.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful GIF.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then turn, like, winking at Ving Rhames.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're not going to shoot the cops.
And, you know, and again, I could go all down these one-liners, but one of my favorite one-liners in this film that I literally almost, like, pissed my pants laughing was, you know, when she gets his daughter's picture back from the warden or the cop, and he was just like, told you I'd get that back. And I was like, that is so stupid. And it was like, but the director said, I need a close up of Nick Cage right when he does that and give that little kind of like smirk. And I was like, oh my God. And again, like I've said it 1,000 times in this podcast, I love movies where I can watch it and be like, God damn, the people that are producing this, that are behind the scenes, and they're just like, what the fuck are we doing? And it was like, this has been green lighted. I mean, clearly it did okay.
Yeah.
But it was just
did
like,
great.
Yeah.
It did great.
And it's like, you know, and again, the Nick Cage, why? Why did he have to have the accent? There was no need for that at all. There was no need. And it was a terrible accent. It was terrible.
Honestly, it was probably a choice that he made. And he was just like,
and the
he came on
like,
set day fine. One and he was like, here's my accent that I'm going to do for this movie. And the director was like, why? Nobody gave you that note.
Your name is Nick Cage, not Gary Oldman.
And then he just did it because you know what? That's what Nick Cage does.
It's like, they're like, well, I guess he talks like this now.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, that is not good. Nobody likes that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, again, the one-liners, the whole storyline is just goddamn ridiculous. I will say it does keep you watching.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why I love films like that, where it's like, I'm watching it. I know it's terrible, but I'm like, what in the hell are they going to do next?
Yeah.
And this movie kind of like fits all of that.
Yeah.
And that's why I love the film.
It checks the boxes.
Well, and again, there's numerous times where it's like, hey, I've had a little too many drinky poos the night before. Mm-hmm. For some reason, for about 7, 8, 9, 10 years, USA was like, every Sunday afternoon, we're putting this motherfucker on. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
Like,
it's because they knew.
Yeah.
They're like, Taylor's drunk. Let's give him something to watch. Like
that poor master control board operator is just like, fuck, Con Air 2 to 5? God damn. Again? Here we go. This is like, shit.
Yeah.
But anyway, still one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And I still think it might be one of my, it is my favorite Nicolas Cage film.
Yeah.
By far. Yeah. And The Rock is damn good. Mm-hmm. But that was more for Sean Connery.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yes.
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 Womack.
Yeah, I love this film as well. John Malkovich, though, great actor. But man, does he deliver some just like dry, he's very enunciating all of his intimidations.
That's
the last thing you'll see is the flies going over your rotting corpse. And then at the end, he was like, the last thing your daughter will smell is my rank breath.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, what's... like,
Jesus.
Geez, you
could calm down.
Yeah, yeah, you could shorten that up a little bit.
He did over enunciate like every word.
I'm going to make another Friends reference. It's like the episode where Joey's doing Gary Oldman. They're doing the scene again. They spit all over each other, doing their lines.
I think that's why I just picture him scolding me. Is just like he enunciates everything that you are doing.
What is, and how come Steve Buscemi lets the girl live at the end? They've
never explained it.
They do this whole thing where it's like, oh man, this guy killed like 30 people and they had to Hannibal Lecter him up, and then they take off his mask, and then you're like, oh, well now I see why they put a mask on him. It's that fucking teeth. God love you, Buscemi. I hope he never hears this, but I heard a joke one time about like, does it ever make you like feel ill that you might be breathing the same air that passed through Steve Buscemi's teeth?
Damn.
He's a lovely man.
Yes. He's a firefighter. But
I know.
He volunteered at 9/11.
He's a great person. I am well aware and I feel bad, but it still made me laugh when I heard it.
He was in Escape from LA.
But yeah, they had, so when, yeah, he hangs out with a little girl in an empty pool, and she sings him a song, and he's like, okay, I guess I won't kill this one.
Yeah.
And that's it. And Danny Trejo was in this. Lovely.
Johnny 23.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, super weird, creepy guy, but yeah. So, yeah, Johnny 23, Danny Trejo, just, he was crazy. But
doesn't Danny Trejo have a rule where he'll only play bad guys if they get
killed
or punished?
I think so. I think you said that before. What do you think about it?
So this was my first time seeing it start to finish.
Great.
Up until now, like you said, I've only seen it on cable every Sunday. Yeah. But
it was a mysterious film.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like one of those movies that's just like always on. One time I spoiled the ending of Sixth Sense for somebody. And like 2 years ago, because he said that he had only ever seen bits and pieces of it on cable and he'd never seen the ending, and I spoiled it for him, and I was like, how did I just spoil a 20-year-old movie?
Yeah,
but it happens sometimes. You just see like bits and pieces of a movie and you never see it in its entirety. I thought it was great. It was campy, it was big, it was very Nick Cagey.
Mm-hmm.
I think the writing was completely stupid. It made no sense why he stayed on the plane, so they wrote in like a diabetes plot that made no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why was his celly on the plane in the first place? They never really explained that. He was transferred for no reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No.
I loved it.
Yeah.
What
was he in for?
They never explained it. They were just like, all right.
What did it all mean?
Like, you like this character. We're not going to tell you why. Mm-hmm. He's in jail. Not going to tell you why. He's getting transferred. Not going to tell you why he has diabetes.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I don't need a movie to tell me why things are happening. No. Just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I, you mentioned the writing, and I had to Google it. I was like, so who was this jabroni? Scott Rosenberg. Mm-hmm. So not only did he write the prestigious Con Air, he went on to continue with High Fidelity,
ooh,
which I thought was a good film.
Mm-hmm. Also
Gone,
Cusack.
Gone in 60 Seconds.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, mm-hmm. He wrote Gone in 60 Seconds?
Yeah, and then he wrote...
well, that was a remake, wasn't it?
The remake, yeah. Yeah,
and then...
you broke it, you bought it, my friend.
And then he's riding this high wave, you know, gone, you know, in 2003, he does Kangaroo Jack.
Oh, no.
Nice.
And then he doesn't write anything for 14 years.
Doesn't need to.
Because he wrote Kangaroo Jack.
Yeah. No. But he makes a comeback with Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh.
And I'm sure you two will like this, 2018 Venom.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It makes sense that
Kangaroo Jack and Venom were written by the same guy.
Yeah, yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Can we review Kangaroo Jack? Can we go ahead and put that on the slate?
Yeah, absolutely. I would like. Yeah, I need to.
I want
to
revisit Kangaroo Jack.
I'll stay.
What is the Price Is Right sound whenever somebody like overbid? That just felt appropriate.
Yeah, but I love this writer is like riding this wave of like late 90s, early 2000s. Like.
He peaked with Kangaroo Jack.
Doesn't get better from here, boys. No. It's 2003. I just wrote Kangaroo Jack. We're going up. Next job, 2017.
Yeah.
Now, hey, I can't say anything. I ain't doing shit. But
what do you think his process was like where he was like, all right, so my success has come from Con Air, Gone in 60 Seconds. What if a kangaroo... talked.
Yeah.
Look. What if he's still?
He's probably riding the wave of all that money, just sticking that Kangaroo Jack money in his ears,
and
telling people, fuck off.
And, you mean his pouch?
Yeah, his pouch.
No.
And you know, and those pouches are filled with mucus, by the way.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
I've heard that rumor.
But they're warm.
Yeah.
But that sounds cozy. Yeah,
I've heard that rumor too.
It's like a womb.
Mm-hmm.
We do need to review the film because it was it a. Suitcase full of money?
No.
What was it that the kangaroo stole?
It was something like that.
That and eight heads in a duffel bag switched up again.
Yeah. I think the kangaroo stole
which
something.
I want to do my Joe Pesci.
Can you do your Kangaroo Jack impression right now?
I don't know if I can. I don't know if I'm ready.
Pretty sure it's Australian.
Yeah.
Back in lounge.
That was always my go-to for the Aussie accent. It's like you have to practice saying Barker Lounger. Barker Lounger.
Good day.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's
Fosters.
Maybe we do a drinking game with Kangaroo Jack every time they say good day.
Yeah.
Do they say good day a lot?
Probably.
Yeah.
At least once.
I say good day.
I don't know, but I know.
Every time he hops.
Yeah.
Shit. Anyway.
So what would you guys give Con Air? Scale of 1 to 10. Just a top of your head.
Yeah. I will say, in all seriousness, it's not that much better than, not comparing the two, but... You know, old buckaroo.
Yeah.
You know, I would say Con Air's probably about a 7. Same with me. It's like it needs to be watched. Like, I'm not sitting here saying it's the greatest film ever fucking produced, but it definitely does need a watch.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of with buckaroo. It's like when you watch it, you're like, do I need to watch this again?
Yeah.
I think I kind of need to. I don't know if you need.
I feel like I'm the same. It's a 6 or 6.5 for me. However, in the genre that it's in, it's its own fucking godfather. It's like if you're wanting 90s action films, like this is the Godfather 2.
See,
The Rock is Godfather 1.
And I didn't like Face Off. I really didn't like Broken fucking Arrow. Love
Face Off.
I love them both because they're both terrible.
Yeah,
and John Travolta. Part of
it. Yeah. Like, they're awful.
Oh no, they are awfully good movies. But if you're comparing it to Con Air, I would take Con Air over those all day.
Yeah. Castor Troy.
Yeah.
It's John Travolta pretending to be Nick Cage, pretending to be John Travolta.
Yeah.
Deep.
Who doesn't want to watch that?
Yeah.
And again, I would love to be in that room of the producers, head writers, all this stuff. It's like, so what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I hope some one of the writers are like, we're going to take his face off.
It's just awesome.
We're in.
Yeah.
Doing it.
I mean, same thing with this movie. They're like, all right, so there's going to be a car behind the plane. It's going to be flying like a plane behind the plane, and then it's going to blow up.
Well, and what did the license plate say?
Ass kicker.
Yeah, Cole Meany, he was one of the transporter dudes in Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah.
What was his name in that?
He was in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, he's Chief O'Brien.
Chief O'Brien.
He's like the quiet, nerdy transporter guy.
Yeah.
And here he's like the coked out the DEA agent.
Yep. Yeah.
Who's like driving the James Bond car.
Flesh.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the dude that's compensating for a lot of things.
He needed to get punched in the face also, I feel, at the end.
Yeah, he did not get his just rewards.
Mm-mm. I mean, his car got fucked up, but like...
He was weirdly okay with it.
Yeah.
He needed his face smacked.
Oh, if he's in Vegas, he needs to get beat up by a Wayne Newton impersonator real bad.
Yeah. Or Wayne Newton.
Yeah, or Wayne Newton himself. Yeah. Yeah, Tom Jones needs to come out and strangle him with a pair of panties.
I still can't get over how long the plane just kept going on the Las Vegas Strip.
Oh, yeah.
Just kept going.
That thing should have been engulfed
and
in flames.
Going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like, it found a pond? What?
Yeah.
That's what it took?
It's a Bellagio.
Yeah.
Malkovich dies on a fire truck on the ladder?
Oh, I know.
He died. No. He died. On a ladder going through a window onto electrical lines
and then onto
inexplicably some sort of piece of machinery that crushed his head.
But if you had said that his downfall was going to happen like from a fire truck ladder, like in the beginning of this, I'm like, no, he's on a plane. It's Con Air, not Con
Surely
fire.
He gets thrown off the plane, right?
That's what we call a lateral move.
Yeah. It is. I feel like that film was written but not finished, and they were like, "Oh shit, wait a minute." Okay, so
I think it's the opposite. I think they wrote it and they're like, "Wait, how do we get everybody on the plane?"
Yeah,
How do we get this guy's daughter to like him in like 15 seconds?
I mean, what a terrifying! It's like,
honey, I got a bullet wound. I'm bleeding from several orifices, and I got lots of other blood from other people on me. I bet I smell awful.
Why
but
did
here's
John
a shitty
Cusack
ass bunny? Take, would you give me a hug?
Why did John Cusack take his family to Vegas?
Travis, I don't know if you do impersonations well, but I want every single impersonation you do from here on out to be Nicolas Cage's character from Con Air, because you fucking killed it. That was perfect.
I just realized he stole his own accent from The Rock, where he's making fun of that other guy. Like, I'd take pride in gutting you, boy.
Well, I think we all know that Nicolas Cage's range is probably rather small.
Yeah.
Minute.
Yeah.
It's like, excuse me. We've seen Ghost Rider.
And Ghost Rider 2.
Yeah. Spirit of Vengeance.
Attack of the Thunder. Oh, is that what it's called?
I mean, it might as well be. Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
nobody's still listening.
Hey, that could have been Superman. Hey. Nicolas Cage could have been Superman.
He could have been.
He was. They gave him a serious look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did.
He wore the outfit.
Yeah,
he wore
the same outfit. Hair.
Yeah.
I think
you showed me that. Yeah.
One of the finalists for the 78 Superman was Dustin Hoffman. All 5'5" of them.
Well,
we'll get into it in the Superman podcast, but also Sylvester Stallone wanted the role.
It's like, hey, you know me from Krypton. I mean, you guys need Man of Steel.
All right, can you do Joe Pesci as Superman?
I don't know how to do a Joe Pesci.
I'm going
to
save that for 8 heads in a duffel bag, which we're going to do very soon. That's a good Thanksgiving pod.
Well, and they did, but did they ever release 9 heads in a duffel bag, the sequel?
The whole 10 heads in a duffel bag.
Joe Pesci will return in 9 heads.
He could use the money.
I give this movie a 7 out of 10.
10 out of 10?
Yeah.
7 out of 10. You give it a 10 out of 10?
No. Oh, no. Yeah, yes.
Oh, God.
Sorry, for the genre that it's in, yes, it is the godfather of these, and it should get at least a 9.5 out of 10 in 90s action films.
You can't cram this movie into one linear range with also things like The Godfather.
Yeah.
But if I had to, 7 out of 10.
Yeah, that's same here. I think that's fair. You can't pigeonhole it, though. It's amazing, you know? I mean, it's not... Unlike the music of Michael Bolton, it's hard to put into one category, you know?
It has its own value outside of critical critique movies.
It defies the rules.
Interesting to start a movie with like, oh, hey, we're, you know, boom, I just got out of the Rangers, I'm home, I'm going to have a baby. Boom, let's do a really long montage about
me
writing
stories
to my daughter I never met.
Yeah. Yep. That was the time of montages, though. That was the time of like the Michael Bay type montages.
But you never see a film where they start a montage within the first 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah. Top Gun had the best montage, hands down.
Montage. Right? Saving them for the motherfucking
and
day.
And this one now, had, montage. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Andy Samberg's Cool Guys Don't Look at Explosions. Uh-huh. This has multiple clips.
Oh, yeah.
And my favorite is Nick Cage flying off the, I think it's the fire truck, where he's going like this.
Yeah.
Just flailing his arms.
Yeah. His head of hairs is flowing. Uh-huh. Yeah, he is muscle-bound Jesus in that scene. He's airborne.
God, he is.
Yeah, he never fell into like a pond or a body of water whatsoever, because I just feel like if he popped out of the water, his hair would not look flattering.
No. It would do the big like arc.
He would do the Statue of Liberty a little bit. A little
bump on the head. Well, he would have to do the Vidal Sassoon where he kind of whips his hair back. You know, full-on conditioner.
Yeah, and he's going to be like fully dry in the next scene.
Yeah.
2 seconds later, they're like, ooh, not a good look.
Yeah. And in which case, you have somebody on staff, on the crew, whose job is to get that hair like dried and fluffed back out. So, and whoever that is got the fuzzy end of the lollipop, I'm gonna tell you right now.
Yeah.
Todd, what did we drink tonight?
We are drinking Begonia.
Begonia.
Tay is a Pinot Noir fan. I went for a Pinot Noir from France.
A Frenchie. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, for those who don't know, red Burgundy is Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
White Burgundy is Chardonnay. And so this is the authentic, you know, real Pinot Noir from France. This is the, this is a Récolte de l'Année. I'm probably not saying that right. Okay.
That's all right. It's Oklahoma.
Yeah. It's a good $20 Pinot Noir from France.
Yeah.
It's bright. It's totally different than what we're drinking.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fruity. It's easy drinking. Yeah, food friendly. This is coming up on not too far from the holidays. If you're looking for something Thanksgiving type meal, it's great for that.
Yeah, that's why I love the grape. It can be, you know, very versatile, different regions, countries. You know, it's damn good. One of my favorites.
Yeah.
Kind of like Nick Cage.
Yeah.
He can do anything you need him to be.
He's been in a lot of regions and has a lot of accents.
If you need him in Raising Arizona, he's there.
Yep.
If you need him in a movie about Elvises who rob casinos, he's there.
If you need to have information about taxes, he's right there too. Or it's like,
you know, snuff films.
And yeah.
Shit. If you need somebody who has a castle, he's there.
Yeah.
Gambling in Vegas, you know, solving mysteries. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just meet people, getting into adventures.
Yeah,
yeah.
Getting flashes of the future and just doing all that and
truffle pigs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all of the above.
The man's got range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this has been another episode of Cinema Fino.
Yeah.
And we thank you all so much. Next time we're going to do Superman the motion picture,
1978,
the original 1978, the Christopher Reeve. Yes, the first big budget Hollywood superhero movie.
Best man, better man.
And so, what was it? Not with a bang, but
with a whimper.
Exactly.
Self-taught, no lessons.
So, we will see you all next time.
Bye. Love you.
You can listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Our website is at cinemavino.net. And reviews of these movies can be found at ToddWatfordMovies.com.
I'll Jack. Stay.
What is the Price is Right sound whenever somebody like overbids?